Welcome to Close the Door and Come Here, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast with heavy leanings towards our two favorite characters, Jaime and Brienne.
There, there was a bear up there, all black and brown and covered in hair.
Hi, I'm Clotho, and you can find me at Clotho Spindle on Twitter, and I'm joined with Kama.
Hi, I'm Kama, and you can find me at Kama Splice at Blue Sky Social.
And Chicky.
Hey, I am Chicky, and I am Chicky on Blue Sky Social.
We're going to be discussing Daenerys' sixth chapter in Storm of Swords, with all the usual trigger warnings for rape and violence. There's a lot of like violent discussion and gory stuff in this one, but Dany is eating breakfast high above the city of Meereen in her terrace garden, and she's watching her dragons chase each other. You know, sounds kind of this little, you know, other the horrible situation, kind of idyllic, kind of, you know, they're chasing each other around the top of the Great Pyramid, and she's talking about how high up she is and the view. And so basically where we stand, her soldiers have taken the city, and we're learning some of the details as we go through the chapter. We learn more. A group went into the sewers, and, you know, Jorah and Ser Barristan were part of that one. And then others, you know, were they ran their ships aground. And it sounds crazy. I don't even know how this is possible. But he's talking about, like, they rammed the ships into the shore, and then they broke them apart. And it sounds kind of, like, difficult.
It sounds kind of nutty to me, especially thinking about, like, old, like, wooden ships. I'm like, how far aground could you get that? Anyway, I guess let it go.
Yeah, it was a little weird.
I know.
Not gonna lie.
And that, like, they took the battering ram off the ship and then used those as more battering rams for, you know, to break them through the different gates while the, you know, the ones in the sewers were trying to open up a gate from in there. And she had asked to be at the front, and of course she said she listened to them because all of them usually don't agree. They all agreed, no, you can't be at the front. And she watched from the rear and heard the city fall, and, you know, there's usually pillaging afterwards and all this. And she basically ends up punishing the leaders in the same way that they had seen the children that were nailed up on these, like, posts, like, throughout, and I think it was, like, 163 or 162, and, they sort of spared the other ones, and...
This is a little war crimey, just a little.
And she seems she feels bad about it, but she doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, no one cares about these frickin' slave owners, obviously, but it's funny how there are these flies that are nagging her throughout this chapter, and it's because of all the death.
Yeah, they mentioned that, right?
Yeah, and
all those corpses.
George has put the little breadcrumbs in here. You know, this is where the show went awry. If they were going to do Danny's actual book ending, they should have included a little of these moral questions about some of the choices that she's making. I mean, you know, she's not the worst person in the series, but this is not exactly the Law and Order ending that you would hope for after Conquest.
Yeah, because it's laying the groundwork of, you know, that she could be, you know, becoming a despot.
Yeah.
I think it's setting her up for some issues, and also that it's, I think, George making a commentary on what happens when you just have, you know, conquering is not enough. It's like, what do you leave in place, and how do you ensure success, which clearly is not happening.
Yeah, well, it's a very big critique of revolution and revolutionaries, you know, obviously, and as usual, he doesn't try to draw any big conclusions. It's just like, what's worse, the old system or destroying the old system and leaving ashes in its wake? And, you know, what is a good question? What is worse? Probably the old system, but it doesn't mean this is painless. So, you know, it is what it is. I mean, like, you know, Danny's not the worst person in this series. This is, I mean, Stannis is doing junk like this, burning people and collective punishment, but, it's not fun. It's not great either.
So she's had they're going, you know, they've kind of sacked the place, and they're like, you know, they talk about how Dario kind of went through, you know, he's got a new set of clothes now. They've all kind of gone through all the riches and stuff and in the pyramids. And she had the harpy throne destroyed, and she's sitting on an ebony bench, which there seems like people around her aren't so happy. They don't think it's good enough for her. And You know, I don't know. They just, they kind of make a, he makes a big thing out of like all her, the clothes she's wearing. And I guess she has to kind of meet the, you know, as she's building up to the queen status kind of thing. And, you know, she goes down there after breakfast and she's, you know, has to meet these envoys who might show up and the tasks of the day, quote unquote. The first one she meets this envoy is Gael. I don't know if that's pronounced it right. He brings greetings from King Cleon of Astapor, which we find out had been a butcher in Graston's kitchen. And, you know, Tanny's like, well, where's the healer and scholar and the priest that I, you know, set up there as the government? And, you know, taking Gael's word for it, he's kind of like, well, they betrayed us and they were going to betray you. And so, you know, Cleon chopped off their heads and basically butchered them. And, you know, she kind of feels sick and tells us she prays these rules well and wisely and kind of, you know, Miss Endai is there and kind of helps her with some of this, like the translation and what's really going on. And now she pretty much admits in her head, she can't say this out loud, but they basically installed a butcher. So it isn't like she's learning that, like, everything that she tried to undo is just coming back, like just replacing it with different people in power. He asked to speak to her in private, and she's like, no, I don't have any secrets from her captains and commanders. And, you know, he basically says, oh, Cleon wants to have a pact between Astapor and Marine against the Yunkai. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right as well. But she responds that she's...
No idea. I have no idea how you're supposed to pronounce it.
And, I don't know if the show said Yunkai, maybe, I don't know. But she's like, no, like, we swore that no harm would come to them if they, you know, released their enslaved people. And Gael's like, they can't be trusted, and Astapor will not forsake her, and they wish to seal an alliance with marriage. So Cleon's looking to try to get married to Dany, and... Miss Endai asked about his other wives, and Gael's like, he'll put them aside, you know, for the Mother of Dragons, and she has to tell him. Basically, she'll consider it, but gives him a room for however long in lower pyramid until she breaks the news, you know.
I mean, I do appreciate how good Dany is at dealing with things like this, because I mean, like, I'm sure your first instinct would be to go, no. And she has to, like, pretend she would think about it because she doesn't want to insult anyone. And, like,
right.
She is good at this stuff. I mean, she was born having to play this game, obviously being raised with Viserys, basically, you know, having to manage him all the time. She's good at it, but, right. Oh, God.
So not to anger or offend them. And, oh, God, it's just such a, it's just awful. And, you know, just the more she hears, the more she realizes just how bad, like, the situation is that she left behind. And this sort of builds up. We're going to get more of it in the chapter towards her, you know, kind of confirming what happens at the end of the chapter, because, you know, it's just, how is she any better than anybody else who's going running around plundering and then leaving? You know, it's kind of leaving chaos in her wake.
It's also like you're going into a society that's incredibly complicated and you're trying to slap out like a solution, which is an admirable idea. Yeah. But it's what, probably thousands of years of like very complicated situation that you have to be. You know, she's not a scholar. She's very good at figuring out, like, sort of, I think, getting the mood of the place, but that's not enough. I mean, to, you know, establish like a lasting peace that isn't, you know, a dictatorship is a lot more complicated than, you know, just knowing like a little bit about the customs of the place.
Right.
And I don't think that's her fault. I think it's just he's making a critique about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. Let me make this clear. I don't know who would have done a better job at this. I mean, you know, dealing with what she's dealing with, and like she keeps running into the issue of she can't, you know, every time she pauses somewhere, just feeding her massive army and the other people who follow her around becomes a really big issue. She's a burden on every geological location that she goes. So there's no wonder, you know, we know why she wants to move on and keep moving.
Yeah.
And what could she do? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know who would have done this better, maybe differently, but you know, a better outcome. It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, you'd have to have like endless resources, which, you know,
stuff. Well, and I mean, I think she should have, when she could have, she should have gotten the hell out of there, but she, for various reasons, that didn't happen. So now she's sort of trapped.
Yeah. Right.
Once she has all these people to, yeah, that's exactly what she.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think that was it. I mean, like, there was a time when she could have like done what Jorah said, gotten a ship, gotten, you know,
right,
and gone. And whether that would have been successful or not is a whole other story. But that ship, as I make a pun, that ship, yep, has sails. And, you know, that's no longer doable. And the problem is, as Chicky says, she's now got, you know, she's got these people who are starting to follow her everywhere she goes. It's that's no longer a viable solution. So she's stuck in this sort of morass of, you know, trying to fix all of these things and deal with the mechanics, the logistics of, okay, you've come in and you've conquered and now something has to be put in place. And there are all sorts of considerations because it's not always as easy as just, you know, okay, we're here, we took over. I mean, there's a whole mess of things, as we find out in this chapter, that she's having to deal with.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, you know, because there's a lot of, like, potentially sketchy characters waiting in the wings. Like, so it's, because she talks about how she can't trust these people and she can't trust those people. And basically that, like, was in the notes. It's like she thinks how all of her victories basically turn to death and horror. And she's like, how could she feed all, like, same thing. Like, how could she feed all those people? And, you know, and the people, there are people going to want to leave with her, even if she can't just leave up and at this point, like, they're going to know she's leaving and they're going to want to leave with her because they don't feel safe staying behind. So her next, like, this just brings more of this from sort of another view, is this the next, the Quarthene trader captain of the Indigo Star is her next, you know. She meets with him, and this captain tells her that Astapor bleeds, their bodies in the streets, each pyramid is kind of like its own armed camp, and Cleon's men have seized, like, every highborn boy in Astapor to make them unsullied for trade, but, you know, it's horrible, but then there's going to be years before they're trained, and he's asking her, like, he's offering all these, you know, amazing, like, riches and goods, trade goods for enslaved people, and Dany tells him we don't have any for sale, and he's informing her that the riverside is full of Myronese begging to sell themselves, is what he's saying, and Danny's shocked and tells him, you know, it kind of goes this little back and forth here, you know, is that, you know, like, he's like, well, they're scared and they don't know what else their options are, so they're desperate. And she basically comes to kind of this decision and rules that, like, okay, they, anyone that wishes can do so, but then kind of adds a sort of, like, a little amendment there, like, okay, but no parents can sell children. I don't know how they're going to monitor this or enforce this, or no.
I mean, basically, I feel like what we have here is Danny has abolished slavery only to immediately re-implement slavery with, like, a few better guardrails. And, like, it's not great.
Do we know that this is accurate? Like, he's saying people are,
no,
you know, but we don't know that's true.
No, we don't.
Because they could just scare people, and there's no way of knowing these people. Yeah. And they,
it could be saying, look, they want to sell themselves back into slavery, and then that's really not the case.
Yeah,
I mean,
just take people. Yeah, there'd be no way of proving it.
This is so just, shady. I so mean, shady. It's a mess. This is a total mess, and I don't know, you know. You see how she gets pushed into this, but, you know, if you step back, the irony is really rich that she's basically just right back to square one. She's right back in it.
It's a mess.
These fucking books, you don't get a second of, like, oh, it's better now.
Well, she thinks that too in the chapter when she goes, this is a little bit later, when she goes back to her room, she's like, did any of the other leaders ever feel okay? Like, did they ever get a break? Did they ever get a rest? Did they ever feel okay? I don't think so. But no. So she, oh gosh. And so she's really kind of been putting it off. She's dreading this thought because she's going to be seeing Jorah any minute now. And she feels sick again, but she orders them to bring her the knights. And Bellis comes in with Sir Barristan, and his head is held high. And Sir Jorah stares at the marble floor. And, you know, she's, one looks proud and one looks guilty. And, she, you know, she tells them basically she wished the gods had dealt with them so she didn't have to when they were down in the sewers. You know, we get a little more information about how treacherous that was and disgusting it sounds. And, you know, she's questions Barristan first, you know, why did he betray her father? And, you know, kind of got the same sort of similar back and forth. Like, he's explained that, you know, but she's like, well, even so, like, why didn't you let me know right off? You know, introduce yourself. Like, he's like, well, I wanted to be sure that she wasn't tainted as well, because he'd gotten a little bit into her father being the Mad King, and, you know, that he was like Viserys had been, and she's kind of in her head, you know, thinking about this and then questioning it, because she's like, well, tells him Viserys had said, you know, that were just lies that they made up about her father. And he's just like, you know, everyone knows the Targaryens, this whole dance close to madness, the gold, you know, gods toss a coin every time a new Targaryen is born. And, you know, he's kind of laying on thick. Oh, he vows to remain faithful. I mean, it kind of feels like she lets him off to me pretty easy, but he's like, you know, if you find me trustworthy, I'm faithful to you. And, she tells Ben to give her the longsword and Barristan to give him his longsword. And he's like, no, I'll only accept it from you. And, you know, he kneels and she swears in her service. So I don't know. It felt like pretty easy. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, it's got the flavor of a foregone conclusion. She already had pretty much decided to accept Barristan. you know, as long as he didn't fuck this up, I guess. What I do appreciate about Dany is that when she hears something that she maybe doesn't want to hear or that kind of shakes her worldview a little bit, she doesn't immediately dismiss it out of hand. And, you know, this is the first time that she's hearing that it might be true that her father was mad a little, not altogether. And, you know, she accepts that there might be truth to it. You can see, you know, she tries to reject it at first, but you can see her pretty quickly go, oh, maybe it's true. And you probably can see that part of this is because Barristan goes, you know, there were signs that your brother was going the same way very early on. And she's well aware of what Viserys was. So, I mean, I'm sure she was primed to receive this, but I do appreciate this about Dany, that she's able to take in new information and to form a new opinion on something.
And it does seem like she's definitely, because, you know, she mentions right here what happens next with Jorah, that she's kind of expecting a certain thing from each one of them, and she wants to hear certain things. It's almost like she could have been swayed with Jorah if he just approached her in a different way, because she, you know, turns to Jorah and she immediately thinks, well, he should be humbler and beg for his forgiveness, because he kind of barrels in with trying to explain away, like, everything he did. Like, well, I attempted to save you, I tried to steer you out of dangerous path multiple times, and every time she kind of counters with him, he just doesn't seem, like, the more he argues with her, the more upset she's getting. And, you know, he's reminding her of things, oh, I stopped you from drinking the wine, but she's like, but you knew it was poisoned ahead of time, and you brought me that, you know. So it's like,
yeah,
he's begging for her forgiveness by the end, but she thinks it's too late, you know. And he tells her he loves her. So I feel like that was like what you said. She was expecting certain things. And it sounds like it could have well, if he had just approached it differently.
Well, and there's a vibe here of like Jorah's known her so long, and he knew her before she came into like the fullness of her power that she has now. And, you know, I think part of him is like, look, I helped take care of you, you know, blah, blah, blah. He feels entitled to credit for what he's done for her. And I think he just doesn't appreciate how, in a way, stone cold she has become about the importance of her leadership. And, you know,
does he know?
She really feels like she has certain moral obligations. And I think she feels like one of them is not to allow people like Jorah to be in positions of power, in a way.
Has she told him the prophecy? Did he know that?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Okay.
And I don't think I don't think he's read the room. Like, I don't think he's clocked that, okay, you know, I accepted your tutelage or your advice before, but okay, now it's got to be a different kind of advice. It's a different position. I'm in charge now. We are no longer in this you know, I'm the scared little girl kind of thing. And I don't think he's figured that out.
Yeah.
And I think she's and more offended.
He should have.
Right. And that he claims to love her, I think, offends her even more. Like, well, if you love me, why did you do it? You know what I mean? She's, you know.
Well, and plus, like you say, she's got this prophecy rattling around in her head now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if he had known that, I mean, that's kind of, and that's what she said when he tells her he loves her. She's like, oh, one for, this is the one for love.
Yeah, you know? The betrayal for love. Off.
So, and then she, what happens next, she orders him banished, and he's getting off easy back to King's Landing. She's basically like, you can go collect your pardon or go to Astapor. I don't care. Just, she tells him he hasn't until dawn or Belwas is going to take his head, and she's holding back tears, and she kind of, like, glances once to watch him go, and he looks very, like, drunk, like he's confused, and, like, he really thought he had a chance, I guess, because he felt like, oh, I risked my life, and that'll be, you know, she'll show I've proved myself in the sewers, and, but she's, you know, he's gone, and she thinks about everyone else who's left her as well, or parents, or brother, and all, you know, it's like, she just, she's not in a good place, and Dario tells her she has a good part, but if she says the word, like, he'll go after him. So basically but she responds, she's kind of wondering to herself, like, she's saying out loud, the scales are balanced, let him go home, but she still has these thoughts of, like, did I do the right thing, you know?
Yeah, she's questioning whether, and I mean, maybe she should have killed him. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I don't know, because I don't even know. Like, it does seem risky to let him go, and then,
yes. You know. Yes, especially knowing what she knows about him and what he knows about her.
Right.
It's a risky move. I mean, I think we all know what Jorah does, and obviously Jorah's just still obsessed with getting back in her good graces, but she doesn't know that at this point.
Because, I mean, part of it could be, oh, you know, keep him around, but then that's just, she'd always have to have some people watching him. You know, she'd always feel like she could potentially be in danger from him, or...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing is he's lost. I mean, when he betrayed her, he lost whatever political capital he had, and he has not been able to get that back. And I don't think he really sees what he did is all that wrong. And I think she gets that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, she can read people. I don't always like her as a character, but I think she has a good bead on some of this stuff of how to.
Right, like
I was going to say how to lead, but that's not really the right thing, because I don't think she is a leader. She's a conqueror. But she has a good bead on people, and, you know, whether she can, you know, whether they're going to work for her or not. And I think he kind of, maybe there was a narrow window where he could have, like, gotten back in, but that's done.
Well, it's kind of like if he had accepted that his role has changed, if he'd groveled and been apologetic, but I mean, that's just, he's just not capable of that, especially with her.
It's like one of those apologies, like, that you see, like, on social media where it gives all the excuses, but they could have just been like, I did a really horrible thing.
I mean, this is the man who doesn't understand, like, who will not accept that, you know, selling his serfs into slavery so that his rich wife wouldn't leave him was a bad idea.
Oh, right,
right. And not morally, morally suspect and full of, he still doesn't get that. So, you know, this is not a guy who's learning, clearly.
Oh, man. And she even, the sad thing is, she even at one point during, she thinks, like, oh, even during the next, she's like, oh, it's not too late even now, like, during the night, she thinks. Which, I guess, okay, we'll go to, she goes back to her quarters and tries to relax, but she can't stop thinking about Jorah and everything that transpired. And, it's like, she goes out, and they have this little, like, I just kind of skimmed over it, but her and, was it Eerie? She's like, takes her to bed, like, you know, George puts that in, and then
Dario,
but
there's very questionable consent here.
Yeah.
You know, which is welcome to the books we're reading, I guess. Jesus Christ.
And it's no surprise she's having nightmares and miserable, and she walks out onto the terrace. So are the dragons, and she's looking at the dragons and Barristan, like, how he's allowed to, I don't know if he's just because they consider, oh, he's now in the clear, but he just walks in on the terrace and he joins her. And, you know, she's like, kind of like, well, can I get any peace? And then he's like, well, I mean, I guess it is nice. Like, she's kind of surprised because he said, do you have any questions? I mean, it's kind of cool that someone's willing to answer some questions, especially after all that, like, be honest. And the first thing she asks is if her father is truly mad. And, you know, he kind of explains that he had his moments where he was okay, especially when he was younger and, like, but it just increased over time. So there were warning signs and, you know, he said it got worse. And as she stops him, you know, I think this is getting to the point where she probably knows the extent where this is going. And she's like, well, someday I might want to hear it all, but it's just too much for her. And, she sends him on his way. She's watching this, like, this, I don't know, I might have got this confused. I don't know if she woke up a couple times during the night, if that was before she fell asleep or whatever, you know, but she's up again. She's watching the sunrise out on the terrace, and, you know, even before the sunrise, that's when she thinks for sure, like, is one of those little, she sees the lanterns, you know, walking up really far in the distance, is that one of them Jura? You know, is it too late? And, yeah, sunrise, and it is, he's gone, and she's, now she has to summon her captains and commanders again, and she's kind of came to the decision as she's been out on this terrace thinking about this all night, because I guess everything she's heard, that she's like, okay, we're gonna stay. Like, every time we plunder and move on, like, disaster follows, and, you know, she's giving these reasons, oh, I gotta take care of my children, and, you know, it's kind of infantilizing, I don't know if she's literal children or infantilizing, I don't know, and her dragons need time to grow and test their wings, and she needs to learn to rule a city before she can rule the Seven Kingdoms, and, you know, it's just not bad. I mean, it's like she tried the other way, but she's gonna stay and be a queen, so it's like, it's kind of like,
yeah,
what do you do? She's trying the other way, so now she's trying this.
Yeah, this feels like a good impulse that she's having, where she's like, okay, this has been a disaster. I've got to figure out how to not have this happen. Right. Yeah. I need to try to, mitigate it. I mean, now we know, we know how well this goes. But it's a good impulse. Gosh. It is
she's
a good
trying,
impulse.
She's trying, and I give her credit for trying. I really do.
Yeah, I do too, because, you know, one thing about Dany is she is able to say, oh, this didn't go well. You know, she really doesn't have an ego about that, about like, oh, I'm the greatest conqueror, or this was amazing, or something like that. You know, she's not always the best at maybe judging why she makes the decisions that she makes, but she is good at looking at what the outcomes are. And this is one of those times. And this, I mean, in many ways, this is a logical choice. She does want to be a good ruler. And so she's like, I need to figure out how to rule. Well, that's good. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, and I mean, as much, I can't believe how much Guile somewhere is laughing at me, because I'm normally not a big Dany fan, but like, I gotta give her props. I mean, she's a teenager.
Yeah.
It's not like she's some 30-year-old with, like, you know, went to college for this. I mean, no. Like, she's like 16 years old or something.
Well, and she also wasn't exactly raised to it the way that, say, you know, as much credit as we give John was in many ways trained to do the kind of leadership that he's doing at his age. Whereas Dany got this kind of haphazard education from Viserys, who himself didn't receive a full education, and she really wasn't trained as well. All of her training has been on the job in the last couple of years, and she's made up a lot of ground.
And there's got to be something also innate in her, and her, maybe it's her empathy, I don't know what, because aside from the fact that she's a child and a female in this world that's stacked against her, she's also, the dragons are a big, you know, this is her huge hand that she has, but it's like, you know, if somebody really wanted to, they could pretty easily overtake her with a coup. So something is making these people that are powerful enough to stop that from happening, you know, stick by her, you know, whether it was the riders, the blood riders after, you know,
Well, she's got the charisma of a leader.
She does.
Like, whatever else she is, whatever other, because I'm not going to be 100% Team Dany here, but she's very charismatic. She can read people. She is not, I mean, I think maybe having been in a position where she was dealing with Viserys, he must have been something of an education as it was, and also Drogo and everything else. I mean, she's picked up some things along the way. And I think she knows how to get these people to follow her. The problem is, like, okay, that's not enough. You know, you have to
something else.
I think you can't underestimate how much there is also an element of a cult leader about Danny.
Yeah. Oh, very much
because,
so.
Yeah.
Because she's built this mythos up around herself, some of it intentionally, some of it not intentionally. And I mean, I think we've all noticed the times where she kind of buys into her own hype at times too, which are worrying.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, I think there's very much a... Yeah, I think she's come to believe in the story she's been telling people. She's got a little too much confidence in certain things. And I think also, I had forgotten that she did ask a few questions. I also forgotten that at some point in the chapter, she's reading those books about Westeros. But she's generally not. I mean, she's got her ideas of how it's all going to go.
Right. Because they mentioned the books she's reading are kind of like, sort of sound similar to the books Sansa would be reading. You know what I mean? A lot of these, which she's trying to get her mind off of things, but like these like Knight's Tales and like, you know, kind of, you know, I'm sure she's reading some other stuff too, but I think the more recent in this chapter, she mentions trying to read something a little lighter fare. But, you know, that stuff kind of glosses over a lot of things. And
keep in mind, those were given to her at her wedding, and this appears to be the first time she's pulled them out.
Oh, okay.
We've all got presents that we haven't touched, you know, but I mean,
well, she has had a lot going on since her wedding.
Yeah. Yeah.
She wants to learn to rule and she wants to be able to go to Westeros. Maybe she decided it's time to actually learn a little bit about, the place she'll be in theory ruling, and how well that would go is a whole other story. But
it just seems like, I mean, I just can't even, I don't know. It just is like, how do you even, the whole plan just seems like there's so many ways that it could go wrong. And it does, you know, it's like, how does this even work?
Well, I mean, I'm really turning into a Danny defender this chapter. I mean, she does like, you know, she was married to Drogo out of harm's way in theory. And, you know, they sent assassins after her. It's not like, she wants that house with the red door. You know, she thinks about it. I don't know if this chapter, but in many of her chapters. But, like, the question is, would anyone ever allow her to do that? And the answer, I think, is no.
Right. Well, I mean,
correct.
I mean, do you think if she just had stayed, like, if she just stayed, would she have been, would she be able to make this, like...
No, I think, like, she's always been sort of, like, because of who she is, there are other people always worried. I mean, if she had maybe gone off to wherever she was supposed to go with the widows of, you know, the... Dothraki, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah.
But, like, now? No. Because now there's a whole mess of people in Essos who know who she is, and they're not going to let her go off and just...
So, and even if she did... Even if she... just say this whole plan for Maureen, if it even turned into a 20-year thing, yeah, she'd always be... That's true. She'd always be at risk of assassination.
She's never going to... She's got to be... She's got to be... There's this forward momentum that I don't think she can stop.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't she even back on Cersei's radar toward the end of Cersei's reign? I mean, like...
I think
so. She has no safe place, as long as she's alive.
Because even if she turned this wanted to be this benevolent queen, I don't think they'd let her be that, because she couldn't just exist there in a bubble.
I mean, I think it would, you know, she would have to camp out somewhere or whatever and stay there and, you know,
anonymous,
and deal with all the things that, you know, political leaders have to, but I mean, she is never, you know, what she wants is never, and that's the sad part, because it's never going to happen. And she, I think she knows that. I can't believe I've defended Danny an awful lot. She usually gets on my last nerve.
We're all defending Danny a lot more these days.
How old is she at this point? Is she 14 or 15 even at this point? Or
like 15, I think.
I think she's 15 because I think it's been about a year, right? Sansa's 12. Arya is like a year older.
I think Dany's story starts ahead of everyone else's story chronologically, not maybe in chapter order.
So she might be as much as 16, but I don't think much older.
She's
than
like,
that.
Yeah, I think maybe 15, maybe 16. Somewhere and now near. She's like Jon's age.
Now that she's gotten rid of Jorah, like she pretty much had to. I don't even think she had another choice with Barristan because she would need somebody who has that information. I mean, that's valuable to her. You know, she needs someone that has all this like cultural information and just societal, just, you know, knows how things work. And
yeah, she really does need that help.
Yeah. Well, that's where she is. So I guess then it's going to be a while, but, you can reach us at closethedoorandgmail.com, on Tumblr at closethedoorandcomehere@tumblr.com. Submit questions to the chapter threads on the Jamie and Brienne subreddit. Follow us on Twitter at Door Podcast. Please like, review, subscribe to us on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you might listen. And please support us on Patreon at Close the Door. It was a good conversation, and close the door. Get out.